One of the joys of life is the comedy duo Leno and Woodley. Leno is Colin Lane. He's the handsome, reasonably sensible one who wants to get on with the task in hand. Hang on, Frank. Woodley is Frank Woodley, who was the curly-haired...
even handsomer.
Yeah, the even handsomer, but slightly more dreamy one, who was always drifting off on some sweet tangent of his own.
Oh, that's nice.
It is nice. Maybe you're one of the thousands of people who love their stage shows, their TV show, their book, and were heartbroken when the duo split 12 years ago. Well, they've made a triumphal comeback at last year's Melbourne International Comedy Festival. They won the People's Choice Award. They got rave reviews. They sold a pile of tickets. And now they're on tour with that show. It's called Fly. Welcome, chaps, to the studio. Or as I like to think of it, the playroom.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for having us, Michael.
Oh, it's very nice to have you here. So the idea of the show is that you, Colin, want to put on a serious play about the Wright brothers, a worthy topic.
I've had enough of the stupid, silly nonsense that we used to perform on stage. And over the 12 years that we've been apart, I've been a lot more ambitious about my aims and objectives in the theatrical stratosphere. I've been watching a lot of Barry Kosky. And no, I haven't.
And I've got to say, Colt's created a great play. It's all about Orville and Wilbur Wright, and I play Orville. No, I play Wilbur. Who do I play again?
You play, I'm still not sure, Michelle.
One of the Wright brothers.
I play one of the Wright brothers. He plays one of the Wright brothers as well, and usually we play the different one from each other.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. That's right. But I'm trying to do a beautiful show.
And it's a great story, the Wright brothers. It's all about how they build that matter transfer machine, and a fly accidentally gets into it, and they mutate into hideous half-men, half-flies. It's an amazing story. I don't know. I'm surprised.
That's The Fly. That's The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
We're not doing that. We're doing the Wright
brothers. We're not doing that.
We're not doing The Fly.
Sorry. Carry on, Michael.
Do you feel as though you've just received a taste of the material that's in the show?
Yes.
Did they just
did
lapse
sound,
into their
did it
script?
Sound like that?
I thought it was very nice the way you segued into it. I mean, there are people in the know who reckon this is the best show you've ever done.
It is in some ways because we, for the first time, prepared for this show in a very mature manner and a well thought out planned manner, because we did the Melbourne Comedy Festival 30th birthday anniversary concert in 2016, and we wrote new material, and we wrote new material about not being on stage for 12 years because we didn't want to do old stuff. So we kind of wrote some new stuff, and that went really well, and the experience was so good that after that spot we kind of were in the dressing room kind of going, oh, well,
The eyebrows went up. They couldn't stay down. They just went up. There's been a bit of conjecture about whose eyebrows went up first, because, you know, it's a little bit demeaning if your eyebrows went up first. You don't want to be the needy one, you know. So I actually think Cole's eyebrows went up first when he said it went, oh, well, that was pretty good.
But our eyebrows went up, our voices went up, and finally by the time we couldn't hear our voices because they were so high, we decided to get together.
The curtain went up.
Yeah, the curtain went up. So it was 2016, and then we thought, we've got stuff on in 2017, so we went, let's do it in 2018. So we kind of started writing the show. Back in the old days, we'd probably write a show 6 weeks before the festival started, whereas we started writing the show maybe May 2017.
You know, I think
we were on 2018.
6 weeks before the show is pretty conscientious. I know stand-ups who write the gig on the way into the venue.
Well,
often 20 minutes into the show when they start writing
it. Yes, they're still writing it.
And probably the other reason why it's the best show we've ever done, because I was seeing some of the other acts that were doing reunion tours, like Fleetwood Mac, and I was inspired by them. So in this show, Colin is actually being played by Neil Finn. So that's another reason why it's actually better, I think.
It's called Leno and Woodley, bro.
Yeah.
Was that a New Zealand accent?
Yeah, kind of.
That was great.
It was kind of New Zealand / Cockney.
Yeah. And so Neil's written all the songs, has he?
Yeah, he's written all the songs.
Yes.
I think there must be more Finn brothers than they've ever let on, because they're pumping out those songs for all those shows.
They're the Daddos of New Zealand music. Or the Baldwins. I think I'm blowing my own trumpet, which is more hygienic, but it is a well-thought-out show, whereas in the past, perhaps we didn't have the experience or the maturity or the security with what we were doing. But I think we've learnt a lot from our past mistakes.
It is a very well-thought-out show.
Well, yes. In the 12 black years when you weren't on stage, I've seen you living your other lives. I've seen you, Colin, on stage.
Yes.
In a lead role in a marvellous play.
What was that?
It's called Extinction, written by, my wife.
Oh, that's
that
right.
One.
Yes,
and
yes.
And you were, frankly, terrific.
Thank you.
I've seen you in a marvellous play written by Shakespeare.
Right.
Yes.
In which you played Sir Andrew Aguecheek and made more of getting through a door while inebriated and wearing a sword than anyone has ever achieved in the history of Western theatre. So they were two terrific performances where you didn't have the support of each other. So I'm wondering, have you learned stuff, stagecraft, from that voyage into the what sometimes called the legitimate theatre?
Well, the legitimate, that's an interesting discussion. I think those shows were extremely satisfying, but I think what we've learned over those 12 years, that the most fun we have on stage is with each other.
Ah.
The most professional satisfaction, you know, the rapport with the audience, and also, as in a play like Extinction or William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, if you do a line slightly differently, or if you move to a slightly different place on the stage, the other actor with a fourth wall situation, excuse my French, will shit themselves.
Yes.
Like, so during Twelfth Night, there was one performance where we were doing the show on the Twelfth Night after Christmas.
Oh,
we were doing the show Twelfth Night. And I was like, so what are we going to do about that? To you know, to some of the other actors. And they're like, hey?
Nothing.
Like, how are we going to tell? How can we tell the audience that this is actually the Twelfth Night tonight?
Yeah.
It's happening.
The irony of this story, Frank, is that Shakespeare's own actors back in the day wouldn't have missed that opportunity.
Right.
They would have worked the crowd with exactly that stuff. But now
they would have improvised.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they improvised. They just made stuff up.
Yeah. Right. In fact, I've heard that a character like Sir Andrew Aguecheek that I was playing, he wrote it for a particular comedian who was a very good improviser and very good at playing those sort of twitty kind of roles. He specifically wrote it for a comedian who he knew could improvise around the material really effectively.
Right. You know? Yeah. So, you know, if he knew he had an actor who could do James Cagney, he'd put a James Cagney bit into the into the show.
That's right.
That's how it worked.
If an actor could do a great impression of Neil Finn, he'd put him in.
For sure. Yes. Even if he couldn't do Neil Finn, Neil Finn would be in. It's a very old-fashioned form, really. You know, it's vaudeville, it's two guys getting up being funny. Are there predecessors that you look at and think, yeah, that's our craft, they're doing what we now do, or they did what we now do?
I don't know. That depends on what predecessor means. but essentially, we both grew up watching pretty similar stuff on the TV. And the Goodies and the Marx Brothers and Abbott and Costello and even Dave Allen and the Two Ronnies and Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. I mean, those were the things that we grew up with. But, I mean, you kind of call it old-fashioned, but I think in some ways people are talking about now because – you know, excuse my vague link, but a lot of the stuff that you see on streaming and TV is very bleak. It's extremely, sad and murderous and that kind of stuff. So I think that
a severed person is lying on a bridge somewhere in Scandinavia.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's a real kind of yearning for stuff that we do.
Often feel that watching our show as well.
Yeah, no, that's me. I'm watching you crapping on.
Right.
But I think there's a need out there for a bit more kind of light-hearted, cheery stuff.
I haven't seen the Laurel Hardy biopic yet, but I really do. I'm really looking forward to it because for me, Stan Laurel is, honestly, I think he's the greatest comedian of all time.
Present company accepted.
Yeah. And I'll be very interested to see how the audiences react when they're doing their bits of comedy in the film. Like if they find it just as enjoyable as I find it when I'm watching the old films, because definitely we are from that tradition, you know.
If there's a straight man in this act, it's you, Colin.
Yeah, I'm the straight guy. Although I have learnt over the years that in some ways I'm the straight guy, but I'm less intelligent than Frank.
You are more self-reflective, perhaps.
And I'm
perhaps
a little bit more self-reflective.
Because Frank just goes with it.
Yeah.
He's in the moment. Right.
There is a great pleasure about just sort of following your nose on stage. And I have found, actually, when I am doing my own solo stand-up, I don't have the same license to do that as when I'm performing with Cole, because I can't afford to go off too deeply into my own little ramblings, because I'll get a little bit, it'll become a bit indulgent, but it's such a fantastic safety net for me having Cole beside me, because he can be like the temperature gauge in terms of the audience's opinion about it, and he can just, you know, berate me And it'll often be funnier, him berating me, than the little bit of weird tangential nonsense that I just went off on. So I found...
Is that right, Cole? Can you read the audience? Can you think, yeah, he's got them, let him go, or he's losing them, I've got to pull them back?
Well, yes, that's a very good question. I think it really depends because sometimes with the kind of humour that we do, you don't really know until you've actually gone through a period of people going, this is not funny, to actually get to the funny bit. You've actually got to push the envelope and then for people to go, no. And then he actually gets to a magical spot. So... it's, I don't know. The answer to that question is, I don't know.
No, but I think you do, like, because you will just, you'll wait for that point. You'll go, oh, this is a bit uncomfortable. And he'll let it sit in the discomfort for a while. But then if it doesn't turn into something after that, he can just, hit me with a blunt instrument and the audience love it.
You've obviously rediscovered something profound in your connection with each other that you lost sight of 12 years ago. Do you know what that was?
I think, well, Frank calls it, like, describes it like this. Imagine going to Europe with your best friend backpacking for 6 weeks. And imagine going to Europe with your best friend and backpacking for 20 years. You know, after 20 years, you just kind of... you get a bit over it. And yes. I think that we needed just some time away to try some other stuff and reflect on what we've done. And then as you get a bit older, you think about what you truly enjoy in life. And what I enjoy in life is being on stage with this Frank Dickwit. So, you know, it's, you know, life is short and... yeah. The audience, you know, the audience really like what we do, so we thought we'd give it another crack. And that's the thing. I know this sounds a bit soppy, but the audience are the most important part of this whole calculation, you know. I mean, if we'd said we were coming back and the audience just went, do you think so? You know, that wouldn't have been that satisfying, but we decided
to come back.
Although
if they all as one in one voice all went, do you think so? That would have been kind of a great moment.
That'd be gold.
Yeah.
Would have been funny, but we've come back and they've embraced it and we just thought we'd give it another crack because that's the best time that we have on stage. And just because you've been doing it for 20 years doesn't mean you can't do it anymore. Maybe we just do it till we're 70, 80, I don't know. Maybe we just keep on doing it.
So you're buying a perpetual U-Rail pass, basically.
Yeah, that's a comedy U-Rail pass. That's right. Yeah.
Colin Lane and Frank Woodley, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Us.
God bless you.
This is, God this bless been... you?
Well,
that's your sign-off? The show is called Fly. They're on tour.
Brought to you by Gideon's.
Coming to a hotel cabinet near you. In March, they're in Adelaide. They're playing Sydney the 23rd of March at the Opera House. They're in Mildura. That'll be a nice gig. They're at the Arts Centre in Melbourne in late April and then at Port Macquarie on the 26th of April. So lots and lots of dates there where you can catch Lano and Woodley back together after 12 years in Fly. I'm Michael Cathcart. This is The Stage Show.